Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, April 7th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri, and here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabwe's former freedom fighters demand more ministerial positions and an end to factionalism in the ruling ZANU-PF party. A Zimbabwean woman is back home after she lived under difficult conditions in Kuwait.
They took me to my employer's in that where I faced a lot of challenges like physical abuse, exploitation, like I would work so many hours, I could not get fresh food, I ate leftovers.
And a judge's ruling that spouses cannot pry on each other's mobile phones sparks marriage debate in Zimbabwe. These stories and much more coming up. Please stay tuned. A young Zimbabwean woman who returned to Zimbabwe after living under difficult conditions in Kuwait is now back home. 27-year-old Nyasha Moyo says she was promised a lucrative deal, which later turned into a nightmare as her so-called employer reneged on paying her a hefty salary. She is among hundreds of Zimbabwean women that were promised good jobs which they never got. Some of them are still in Kuwait, where they have been turned into commercial sex workers and slaves. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye speaks with Moyo about her experiences in the hands of her employer and related issues.
I got it through an advert in the newspaper. Then I called the agent and he told me that he was recruiting people to go to Kuwait to work as maids.
And did you have to pay any money, or what happened after that, after you responded to the advert?
You only pay $100 fee to the agent, then he processes your flights and visa and everything else.
How long did the process take you from when you went to the interview to actually leaving for Kuwait?
It took about 2 weeks.
And then when you arrived in Kuwait, did you know who you were going to be working for, or were you told about them beforehand, or how did that happen?
I was just told that a certain agent was going to come and pick me up at the airport. So I just waited for the agent until they came to pick me up.
And then from there, what happened?
Then they took me to my employer's in that where I faced a lot of challenges like physical abuse, exploitation, like I would work so many hours. I could not get fresh food. I ate leftovers. I didn't get enough time to sleep or enough time to relieve myself in the toilet. I was not allowed to use my phone, and I did not have access to go outside, and I was denied an off day. So basically, I was just locked up the whole time.
How big was the family, and how big was the house where you were working?
The house is a three-story building, and there were four kids, mother, father, and a grandmother, and the driver. So basically, there were eight people in the house.
And what were your duties? When did you start your work, and when did you finish?
My duties were to clean the house, to do the washing, to cook. I would wake up at 4 a.m. They would force me to wake up at 4 a.m. And I would finish from 12, 1, 2. I didn't have a fixed timetable. They would stretch my hours up to until 2 a.m.
And what kind of salary were you getting for all this work?
When I was still in Zimbabwe, I was told that I was going to get a salary of about $600. But when I got there, they told me my salary was 50 KD, which is $230.
So how were you able to now break that contract and repatriate back to Zimbabwe when others are still stuck there?
I was able to contact the Zim consulate in Kuwait through secret messages, and they came to rescue me.
That was Nyasha Moyo, who was once trapped in Kuwait and is now back home, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye from Harare.
Hello there. To mark Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary, Studio 7 will be giving out solar-powered radios or T-shirts for our lucky winners. Simply invite 10 friends to join our VOA Studio 7 Facebook page. Ask them to like our page. Keep their names so we can verify your claim. will also be running a daily competition for lucky winners. You only need to answer a simple question about Zimbabwe's independence. The draw will be conducted April 18th, Independence Day. Don't be left out.
And the question today is, who was the first president of Zimbabwe? Answers to our last two questions are Joshua Nkomo and Josiah Magama Tongogara. The British government has allegedly rejected President Robert Mugabe's ambassador-designate, Rain Jukula, who is accused of seizing a white-owned commercial farm recently in Zimbabwe. According to the independent newspaper Newsday, the British government is allegedly questioning Jukula's credentials following reports that he has been allegedly been involved in taking over Centenary Farm in Fig Tree, Matabeleland region, owned by David Colony. Efforts to contact the British and Zimbabwean authorities were in vain as they were not responding to Studio 7 calls. Media Center Director Ernest Mzengi was today picked by detectives and interrogated over a story published by the Zimbabwe Sentinel on a plot to bomb Gushungo Dairy. The Zimbabwe Sentinel website is run by the Media Center. Gift Mutisi of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who is representing Mudzengi, says the police were not very clear on whether Mudzengi was under arrest or not, as they had told him they just wanted him as a witness in the bombing story. Mudzengi was finally released. We managed to get hold of him and we spoke with him.
Picked me up early morning and what they were mainly asking, it was sort of an interview. They were seeking information around a story which was published on the Zim Sentinel website. The story was reporting statements from one Owen Kachuta, who is said to lead a political party and who is also being accused of treason. So the reporter who works from the Media Center, who worked then actually from the Media Center, reported what Kachuta simply said, and is what is contained in our story, in the story on the Zimbabwe Sentinel website. So that's they were asking around. Obviously, they also wanted to know more about the Media Center, and we gave them.
We can say you cooperated with the police.
Yeah, obviously, I cooperated with them insofar as answering the questions what was done.
And are you expected to appear in court as a state witness?
I don't know. Obviously, I can only appear with regards to the story and pointing out that as far as I believe, the journalist wrote what this guy said.
And how do you view all this?
At the moment, I take it maybe to mean that maybe the police are doing their case, they are doing their job, and they took us to interview us over a story. And as citizens, I think it is also a duty maybe to cooperate with the police officers.
That was Media Center Director Ernest Mudzengi in Harare. MDCT President Morgan Tsvangirai today announced his shadow cabinet that he said will work hard in crafting and articulating alternative policies and programs for the country. He announced his shadow cabinet before the party's National Executive Committee that met in Harare today to discuss the national crisis, adding that he had no doubt about the capacity of the men and women he appointed. Some members of the cabinet are Dr. Tapiwa Mashakada, Finance, Energy Development and is Engineer Elias Mudzuri, Transport and Infrastructure, Honorable Morgan Komichi, and Policy, Honorable Nelson Chamisa, among several others. Tsvangirai speaks to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about this issue.
Part of our transformation plan, first of all, to restructure how we would like to govern. In the first place, we are looking at the President's office to say what issues should the President's office deal with, which is the issue of economic planning, the issue of public-private partnerships and foreign direct investment, the issue of war veterans, the issue of land commission. Those are the five areas in which, and of course, intelligence. Then, when we look at the shadow cabinet itself, we are looking at what are the key priority areas that we need to look at. We are looking at the economy, we are looking at the infrastructure, we are looking at institutions, and we are also looking at restoring international goodwill, and as well as setting up an advisory team within the various ministries, and of course advising the president. So it is in that context, and of course to really redefine each particular portfolio as to what focus. I can go one after the other, but the most important one, the economy, is that we need to have a recovery plan. And of course the issue of foreign affairs, we need to make sure that our foreign affairs is not just the question of diplomats, it is a question of attracting foreign direct investment, business relations and trade relations. So in looking at all this, we're also looking at the size of government to say we cannot afford to have a cabinet which is beyond 19 or 20 ministers.
Is this executive a shadow of the ZANU-PF cabinet?
No, it is not.
That was MDCT President Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This month we are commemorating Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary. The 18th of April 1980 was a significant moment celebrated by millions of people, including the late great Bob Nesta Marley, on Independence Day in Harare. Cause that's the only way we can overcome a little trouble. What are your thoughts of that moment? And what about 36 years later? Send us your thoughts on our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. That number again, 001-202-465-0318. We are also on Facebook and Twitter.
We have a message from a Bulawayo resident, Anastasia Moyo.
It doesn't mean anything to me. Actually, I am even thinking that maybe if the country had continued to be ruled by the whites, it would have been a better country. Because at that time, we had food. My father was working and there was nothing that was really a problem. So for the fact that we had that they were being discriminated upon. So for now, I see independence as having been a problem, a source of all these problems that we are facing here.
Send us your audio messages as soon as possible to our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. That number again, 001-201-465-0318.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, our veterans for ministerial posts and other issues fair. But first, a look at regional and international news. The battle between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders for the U.S. Democratic presidential nomination is becoming more contentious, with the candidates exchanging sharp attacks about who is more qualified to be president. Russian President Vladimir Putin has denied allegations that documents leaked from a Panamanian law firm contain evidence of corruption among his closest associates, saying the so-called Panama Papers are part of a Western campaign to undermine Russia. Belgian prosecutors have issued a new appeal for help in finding the suspected third attacker in last month's deadly Brussels airport bombings. South Sudanese opposition leader Riek Machar says he will return to the capital on April 18 to form a transitional government with President Salva Kiir more than 2 years after a feud between the two resulted in war. And the man who admitted to hijacking an Egyptian flight last week with a fake bomb will be extradited to Egypt after Cypriot and Egyptian authorities agreed to the legal procedure Thursday. Zimbabwe's war veterans held a meeting with President Mugabe today and made several demands, including a call for the president to allocate more ministerial posts to former freedom fighters. Such demands come at a time when Zimbabweans expected the war veterans to ask the president to rest after almost 36 years in power. But this issue was not raised at all, as the former freedom fighters mainly focused on their welfare and related matters. Is it fair for freedom fighters to press for more ministerial positions from a ruling party riddled with factionalism? One of the factions comprising mostly of people who did not physically take part in the liberation struggle is believed to be backing First Lady Grace Mugabe to succeed her husband. For a perspective, we reached ZANU-PF activist Gazira Chirumanzu and political commentator Charles Mutasa. Chirumanzu tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube war veterans are happy about the outcome of the meeting.
The war veterans were itching to meet their patron. And also the patron would even gear up by, you know, summoning the leadership of the war veterans that they must meet every year instead of every 5 years. So I think that is a sign of happiness. And that is a sign of building the war veterans. And that is also a sign of respecting war veterans. And the war veterans were also happy because they were in a position to articulate, you know, their feelings, their aspirations, how they want the party to be run and so forth. So, in short, I would say everybody was happy, more than happy.
Mr. Mtasa, do you think so?
I don't think so. Meeting does not constitute happiness. And what is calling articulation of issues, these are issues that have been in the public domain. And everybody knows that these people have been complaining about the same issues that they raised today. And there is no measurement that they were happy because they were able to meet their patron and speak to him. What could have made them happy is if he had said, this is how we are going to address A, B, C, D. But promising and promising does not constitute happiness.
Now, indications, Mr. Chirumanzu, is that the war veterans were demanding more ministerial positions. Is that fair?
No. I think you must maybe have, you know, quoted them wrong. They never said they want ministerial position, but they said, according to the ideology of ZANU-PF, the way they fought for this country, they prefer key ministerial positions to be in the domain of war veterans because they will be in a position to deliver, right? They did not say they want all the what. All, remember, we have got the youth wing. We have got the women's league. So it will be, you know, bad for the war veterans to come up with such a suggestion. This is why I am saying you must have quoted them wrongly.
What do you think, Mr. Mdasa?
Yeah, is that not speaking to the problem of factionalism in the party? Because everyone who is a minister now, I think he deserves, by virtue of qualification, to be one. And we don't think those people are outside the party. And why would 36 years down the line the war veterans start demanding for those positions that they could have demanded for earlier on?
And there were expectations, Mr. Chirumanzu, that maybe the war veterans were going to tell the president to rest a little bit after ruling for almost 36 years. What happened? Some people were expecting that.
No, you see, it is only those people who are not within ZANU-PF structures to think of that. Remember, the structures of ZANU-PF also include the war veterans. And President Mugabe was overwhelmingly voted to be the president of ZANU-PF, the last Congress. So it is only the imagination of those who do not know how ZANU-PF works.
Mr. Mtasa, do you agree with that?
I don't think that is the case. I am sure there are many aspirants for succession, and it is necessary for the party to have a succession plan. And you will remember, Mr. Chirumanzi, that the whole issue of factionalism has to do with people fighting for the position of the president. And you can't tell us that everything is well when people are creating factions to succeed the president.
Yeah, because as a result of those sanctions reported in the newspapers, this is why there was this meeting. That, look, it is not all well within the party. It looks like the party has lost its ideology. And this is why the president also emphasized unity. If you still remember, he started mentioning unity between Comrade Nkomo and himself. And he said this thing must remain. He even introduced to the world that at that conference, there was Comrade Mpoko from ZAPU, Comrade Mnangagwa from ZANU, and these two combined to form ZANU-PF. That was the ideology of the Patriotic Front. And it must remain so. So for anyone to come up with faction, then that particular individual, it will be a way of maybe infiltration within ZANU-PF. But otherwise, there is no faction. This is why I said earlier on that there is no one in ZANU-PF who claims to be a leader of a certain faction.
Yeah, the issue is not the absence of unity. It is the absence of a succession plan. That is why.
Yeah, but this succession plan, but Comrade Mtasa, this succession plan is brought for discussion by outside the media, by foreigners. But this succession plan is not within ZANU-PF.
That was Gadzira Chirumanzu, a ZANU-PF activist. You also heard from Charles Mutasa, an independent political analyst. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. Meanwhile, the freedom fighters also demanded an improvement of their welfare and an end to factionalism in the ruling ZANU-PF party. They also say the party should have a political commissar who participated in the War of Liberation of the 1970s. Our correspondent Patricia Mdadigwa reports from Harare.
The war veterans who held a meeting today with their patron President Robert Mugabe at the City Sports Center in Harare also urged the president to ensure that they are given at least 20% of the land seized from white commercial farmers. In his response, President Mugabe appeared to be giving the war veterans the right to grab more white-owned commercial farms. While Mr. Mugabe used a conciliatory tone when he addressed the war veterans, he also encouraged them to be disciplined and warned that there will be serious consequences for those that attack the party leadership.
After the war, you must have the same discipline. Don't ever do that because you have a position. I never do that. Karandini, my chief, even when I go to my own chief person, but you know, to our own bureau.
Different thematic committees that presented reports at the meeting complained that they are being neglected, adding that they have not yet enjoyed the fruits of independence. One such speaker was war veteran Mnyaradzi Machacha, who spoke on the party ideology, warning that the young generation should know that the war vets are the roots of the party. The war vets, who spoke to Studio 7 after the meeting, said they feel humbled after holding the meeting with Mr. Mugabe.
Today it was a very good day for us because we've met our president, who is the patron of the War Veterans Association.
Christopher Muchangwa, chairperson of the War Veterans Association, said he was happy with the outcome of the meeting.
We had a great meeting with the president. It was a chance where the membership of the war veterans, the delegates, were here, could meet their patron. And it was a frank discussion and done in a comradely way. You know, people were candid to each other.
The war veterans urged President Mugabe to ensure that they are the bedrock of the party. In his response, the president urged party supporters to unite and avoid factionalism. The war veterans demands for the ruling party to have a political commissar who participated in the liberation struggle of the 1970s appears to be targeted at senior party officials like Xavier Kasukwere, who is the current ZANU-PF political commissar, Professor Jonathan Moyo, and several others believed to be supporting a faction of the party backing First Lady Grace Mugabe to succeed her husband. The faction is known as Generation 40 or G40. The other group, Team Lacoste, is allegedly led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is being begged for the position by the war veterans. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Some Zimbabweans have commended a judge's ruling that spouses should not pry on each other's mobile phones, with legal practitioners noting that the judge merely interpreted the law enshrined in the country's constitution. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa reports.
Passing judgment on a culpable homicide case involving 30-year-old Fortunate Soro on Tuesday, High Court Judge Justice Tawanda Chitapi said it is illegal for spouses to pry into each other's mobile phones, as that infringes on the privacy of individuals. Soro was convicted of killing her late husband, 50-year-old Petros Mutasa, for refusing to show her a message that had been sent on his mobile phone. She was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Some Chinoy residents welcomed the judgment, which becomes a judicial precedent, meaning that some judges may refer to it when handling similar cases in the future. Gwendolyn Chitemo welcomed the judgment, saying that will minimize some misunderstandings among couples.
Yes, it is a good judgment. My husband shouldn't touch my phone and I won't touch his. So I think it's a fair judgment.
Tapiwa Chakwizira concurred, adding that the judgment gave individuals the right to privacy that was no longer observed among spouses.
The ruling is quite positive in the sense that it emphasizes the element of confidentiality and privacy. Everyone is entitled to his privacy or her privacy.
But Crispin Neshambe said this judgment may cause problems as it defeats the purpose of marriage, which defines those who tied the knot as becoming one flesh after exchanging vows.
I think this new passed judgment will have implications on the way how people live in a household, given the fact that there is no more sharing of information that one will be receiving, especially in her or his cell phone.
Human rights lawyer Zikamai Machingura said the learned judge interpreted the law correctly as he upheld the right to privacy, which is in the supreme law of the country.
Take the correct legal position, in particular as it fully recognizes the right to privacy, which is in the constitution. I do not believe that when people marry, they then marry in community of property. The right to privacy can coexist with the marriage, and the Marriage Act does not give either party to the marriage interfere with the privacy of the other.
Soro will serve 8 years in prison after 2 years were suspended on condition that she does not commit a similar crime within the period. Reporting for Studio 7 in Shinoi, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Thank you, Chigoriwa. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our host of the Women's Roundtable will be talking with listeners and experts about human trafficking. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.